Doing pretty good, Glenn.
I would think
you?
So. I would think you're doing pretty good here
pretty
today.
Good. You Steve, always, Fred, Pete, how you guys doing?
Oh, just doing fantastic.
So far, so good.
Very upset about the non-safety call. Other than that, it's perfect. Miss Fugle had me up all night, too.
So we're sitting here, and every Monday, usually, you go over things that you did well and things that you did poorly. I would think you're being challenged with this one, so we'll leave the floor to you. What did your team do poorly yesterday in a 59-0 win? Did you find something today when you went through the film?
Well, there's, you know, you give up, 170-some yards rushing, so.
Slippery out there.
You know, we could have done a better job on that.
Yeah. But,
no, I mean, look, overall, we played a solid game, got some turnovers. Our offense took it, you know, it was a good complimentary game. We got field position in the kicking game, good punt return, good coverage units, got some turnovers. Our offense converted those turnovers into points. And we did it again. You know, we got good field position. We turned the ball over again. Our offense scored again. So, you know, it was a great complimentary game. And when we had opportunities, for the most part, we were able to take advantage of them. And it was great job by the players in less than ideal conditions. They handled the ball well. They executed pretty well. We got off the field on third down. So we scored on offense. We ran the ball. We threw it. There was a lot of good football out there.
You talked about Tennessee being, you know, a decent team. They almost beat Pittsburgh to be in the game, shut their run down. And you scored at will. I mean, Brady had missed some open passes in other games. And in bad conditions, he was hitting those passes. With a heavier ball and bad conditions and pressure on him. And how do you explain that? Bad footing and everything.
Yeah, well, I think that just really points out and highlights when you can do it and when conditions aren't ideal and you can go out and execute well, then when conditions are good, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to do that. So.
That's the theme for the week.
That's exactly. You got it, Fred.
It's always a lesson.
You know, when you do it in the hardest situation, and sometimes you complete a pass against a tough coverage or a tough look, or you stop a play that's defensively one where they have good angles on you or good leverage, and then you get other plays where you should be in control and you're not. So it's a good lesson really for all of us about, you know, good execution and really being on top of things, doing things right, handling the ball in poor weather conditions. If we can do it there, then we certainly should be able to do it when things are in our favor.
Did the weather play any factor in the game plan, or was that going after their secondary, was that the game plan from the get-go?
Well, we were a little bit concerned with the with the rain and the wind in the passing game, but when that rain turned to snow, that really helped the passing game, and so we opened in four wide receivers, and we had a number of multiple receiver sets, and I think that really plays into the advantage of the offense. We know where we're going, they don't. And when footing is important, then I think you can, you know, have an advantage. It's hard to get a lot of movement in the running game, but it's good for the runners because they're hard to tackle. So if you can get them through the line like we did, like Chris Johnson did, there's some yards to be made back there in the secondary. It's getting them through the line. That's the hard part when conditions aren't good.
But they had problems holding on to the ball all day. You were in the same conditions, haven't practiced in this, all year. And why was it such difference with footing on cuts to routes, and why was it difference when holding on to the ball?
Well, you know, we lost a couple balls, but, you know, we got them back, you know, on the punt. And, you know, we had a couple drop passes. But, again, overall, it was pretty good.
Cleats any different? I mean, it was a standard cleats.
I don't know what they did, but, you know, we tried to get the best footing we could out there. And, you know, we worked hard on it. And I think the players played with their feet under them, bent their knees, and tried not to, you know, get overextended and plant on their inside foot and things like that. So we, for the most part, were able to stay on our feet and play with good balance.
Big plays yesterday. Big passing plays, big running plays yesterday. How much emphasis was placed on that? We've talked for the first 5 weeks about grinding it out and not being able to get those big plays. How did that suddenly change?
Well, good execution. You know, to throw the ball down the field, you have to have good protection. We had that. You have to have good route running, good throw, good catch. You got to get behind them with good action, whether it's play action or whatever the design of the play is. You got to find a way to get back there. So. And then hit them. So we going into the game, we're the only team in the league didn't have a 20-yard run or a 40-yard pass, and so that changed.
Sure, made up for it.
Did you mention that a few times this past week to the team?
I thought you might. I mentioned it a number of times.
Yeah. So that flea flicker though, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis sold that as well as I've ever. I mean, he was a good 2.5-3 yards in. I said, oh, he's just running up the middle, and all of a sudden the ball just flies out. That's as good a sell job as I've seen on that play in a long time.
It was very well executed, and Wes was actually on an over route, and Randy was on a deep post. But had Wes just kept going, he probably would have been 5 yards behind the defense, too. So, you know, you don't want to have both guys running to the same place, but it was a play where had we had the pattern reversed, if Randy had been under and Wes had been deep, Wes would have been 5 yards behind him. So it had a lot of sell to it, and it was a great protection. Ben Jarvis sold it and threw everybody up there, and Tom made a great throw, and, you know, Randy ran through it.
Now, at the end of the half, you're up by a considerable margin, and you go to the two-minute drill. Is this all now practice for the future games? Is that
it's
situational?
It's halftime. I mean,
that's what I said.
You can't. You know, we've seen those games before. Last year in the Arizona Jets game, the
Buffalo
Indianapolis
Bills years ago,
Buffalo game against Houston, the Tampa and Indianapolis game a few years back. You know, it's halftime. So yeah, we're still trying to score. We're still trying to. You know, game's not even half over. You know, we're still trying to score.
Is it bizarre to you that people want you to take a knee going to halftime and not put up the points? You got two quarters left. You put up that many points. Why can't they?
Yeah, well, exactly. And that's a good football team, too. And again, when do points happen? They can come in spurts when you have turnovers. Turnovers in big plays, you can score a lot of points in a hurry. So, you know, there's no guarantee that those things won't happen later on in the game. I think when you can get them, you get them.
And the idea of – I'm sorry. And the idea of Tom Brady starting the second half, same idea?
Yes, sure.
Situational?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, I understand it was a big lead, but, you know, when you only have 45 players active for the game, somebody's got to play. You don't have backups for every spot, so somebody's got to go out there and play. And you know, we gave Tom, another series in there. And, you know, he prepared to play for 60 minutes. The entire team had, and so we were playing for 60 minutes.
Because it's funny, when you have the line of questioning that we get here is, why don't they put the second and third team in? Obviously, you know, Copen's still in there, and so is Neil. You don't have guys to put in for.
You know what I think it is? I think people are looking at it as if it's college roster where you've got 100 players, you know. When you see Oklahoma up by 60, you know, they get guys,
players.
You know, that don't have numbers on the back coming out there in the field. You've got 45, and most of those guys, not all of them, and the way you're playing people right now, moving people in and out, they're all playing during the course of the game.
Right. Well, you go into the game with seven offensive linemen, and you have two backups. Well, three guys got to stay. You go into the game with four backs, and, you know, Sammy got hurt there on the second, third play of the game, whatever it was, and now you're three backs. I mean, somebody's got to play.
Talking about the 45, there were a lot of eyebrows raised when the 45-man roster came out, and Adalys Thomas was not on it for yesterday's game. You said after the game that he was a healthy inactive. Is that a week-to-week thing? Is it more permanent than that, and was it merit, or was it a matter of what your game plan was for that day?
Well, we have a lot of, we had a lot of healthy players on defense, and with Junior in, that gave us an extra inside linebacker, which we really haven't had. I mean, with Eric Alexander, primarily special teams and contributed in some sub-defenses, Junior, a little more of a first and second down type of linebacker. So, that kind of squeezed us a little bit, and we made one of our defensive linemen inactive and two of our defensive backs. So, Pierre and Rob Ninkovich both have significant roles in the kicking game and also have played on defense and played last week against Denver and of course, Derek and Tully. And so you can't have everybody there.
Was Adalys here yesterday, or did he leave? There were some reports that maybe he left the stadium. Was he here?
Well, we talked to him. We had a meeting Sunday morning. So we told most of the inactive players at that meeting Sunday morning what their status was.
Are inactive players required to stay here with the team, or can they leave?
It can. It could be either one.
Do you have a problem with him leaving?
Oh, no, no, okay. No. Well, I don't think he ever I don't think he left. I think, you know, after the meeting, you know, we tell some players they don't have to be at the game.
How did Grandpa play? I mean, the guy has
running around.
He looked like his quickness was, you know, he still runs well. And
he's got a fumble.
He's running around.
Any rust?
You know, he has a different playing style than Gerard and Gary do. And I think offensively that it causes you a little bit of a, keeps you off balance a little bit, I guess.
The way
he plays and the way Gary and Gerard play. Again, I mean, they all play good. I'm not saying one's bad, one's good. I'm just saying there's a little different style in how Junior, you know, attacks things and runs through gaps and is more aggressive into the line of scrimmage. And Gary and Gerard do that also, but they also flow more and they have more range and they make more plays on the sideline. Junior probably makes more plays between the tackles. So, but, you know, from an offensive line standpoint, you kind of get used to blocking one guy and all of a sudden you get a little different reaction from a linebacker, and that I think that helped all of them. I think it helped Junior. I think it helped Draw. I think it helped Gary.
Did he play more like D'Ossi did, Junior? Oh, it was a nose tackle.
That's the similarities. I wore 55 once. That's about the extent of the similarities. In the secondary, you started Butler and Wilhite. And is that a reflection on what Tennessee was bringing or a reflection on Springs and Bodden?
Well, you know, they both had good, both had real good weeks of practice, and we put Darius and Jonathan in there, and things started going pretty good. Mm-hmm. And they threw it up early on Jonathan. He made a play, and then Darius had an interception, and so it was going good. We just kind of stayed with him. Lee and Sean both played on third down in our dime defense, and so they all, you know, I think through the course of the year. They're all going to play. We're going to need them all. We have used them all. We have needed them all. I think we're going to continue to do that. And how it goes from week to week or game to game may change. But, you know, in the end, they'll all play.
Seems like you're having more and more confidence, though, in a lot of young players. We've talked about this for the last few years of getting younger defensively. You have even mentioned it a couple of times. Seems like you got great confidence in young players throwing them in that situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Patrick got in there yesterday. Pat Chung got in. Made several nice plays, of course, the interception that we all saw, but, you know, made some nice plays in terms of his run fits and, you know, recognition in the passing game. So, you know, Brandon McGowan played very well yesterday. Not that he's a young guy, but, I mean, he's, you know, on the younger side.
Yep.
And so, you know, we have gotten some of those guys in there, Gary and Gerard, of course, and so it's good. We're, you know, we're faster. We seem to get the more plays and you know, we've got to do a little better job of tackling a couple times in the secondary, but I think that, you know, overall team speed and range was good, and we had good coverage, you know, on some big receivers out there, and that was a challenge for us, you know, on Gage and Britt and even Washington, that those are, you know, bigger guys, physically taller, heavier, and I thought our corners did a pretty good job against them.
So you think they have a little more speed with that group out there, closing, ability to close on the ball barriers?
Yes, well, I think that, you know, again, between a veteran player and a young player, you know, a young guy might be a little bit faster and maybe a little bit quicker, and a lot of times the veteran guys get there, you know, maybe a step or half a step sooner on their experience and recognition and anticipation, you know, if that evens out, if the younger guys can read and react as quickly as the veteran guys and they're not getting that step, then they start to get their step or half a step faster. So, you know, that's kind of the transition that you go through, and again, I think our young players are working hard, and they're doing a good job for us.
Now, I know you said via your conference call today that Brandon Tate and Mark LeVar were a good chance that they were going to practice this week, but people should know that just because they're practicing, you still have a three-week period before you want to decide to
acclimate
them.
Right. Yeah, so we could practice them for up to 3 weeks, and then at the end of that three-week period, either decide to activate them or sorry,
you okay, Fred?
He's all choked up.
All right.
Either activate him or put him back on PUP, which would they would be out for the year then. It would be, you know, PUP reserve for the remainder of the year. Right. Or we can make a decision anywhere in that three-week period.
How about Sebastian Vollmer? That one play, certainly, where he took out Bullock and that opened up for Lawrence Maroney was terrific on the pull. How did he play overall?
You know, Sebastian did a good, solid job. You know, that was a good defensive line, and of course, Van de Bosch is, you know, one of the best ends in the league. And, you know, he did a good job in the running game and in a passing game. We gave him some help at times. At other times, we didn't. And, you know, he was involved in some plays at the point of attack, some pulls, plays on the backside, all that. But, you know, he thought he gave a good account of himself. He's big. He's long. And he played hard. He played physical.
Did he actually play soccer at one time?
Yes.
He kicked the players, not the ball.
Gotta be kidding.
Yeah.
How does he move up? He
stands there.
I mean, I know he's athletic.
I'll just say I'll be a matador. I mean, a clown, whatever he's doing. You know?
Soccer players are tiny, though. Bulls are 2,000 pounds.
I know.
How much help did you give him with the tight ends, Vollmer?
Well, as you saw, there were times when we had two tight ends in the game or had them side by side. There's other times we were four wide receivers or three wide receivers. So, you know, we moved it around again, tried to, you know, keep them off balance a little bit where they just couldn't count on, you know, one look all the time. And again, some of the action went to them, some of the action went away from them, and we slid it both ways. But I think overall, you know, just try to mix it up. But I think Sebastian did a good job in whatever it was of being able to, you know, get his hands on them and you know, keep him at bay or run him past the quarterback. Tommy did a nice job of stepping up on a number of those passes where we actually had pressure on the edge, but, you know, he was able to slide up into the pocket, and that's because Steve and Dan and Logan did a good job inside and gave him that room to step up. So
how many times have you let a rookie play left tackle in your head coaching experience? That could be a scary proposition.
Well, Matt Light.
Yeah? Matt Light, no one in Cleveland, no. That's it, huh?
No. Cleveland, we had Tony Jones.
Yeah.
So.
How much of your game plan did you pull back because of the weather, or did you just try everything and see how it went?
Well, I think we actually kind of opened it up a little bit with the with the snow, that we got into a little bit more of four wides, a little bit more of a spread game, just because we felt like, you know, we would have some advantages throwing the ball. And really the snow wasn't bad at all. I watched the game and watched it on the coach's tape, and there's a lot of white there, and it's sort of hard to see. But actually on the field, it wasn't bad at all. Tom could grip the ball. The receivers could catch it clean. You know, that wasn't a problem. And the footing was a lot tougher for the defensive players than it was for the offensive players. So we weren't afraid to throw the ball, kind of like Arizona last year, kind of like, you know, Oakland in 01, where – you know, sometimes the advantage goes to the receivers and the pass protectors.
But don't you feel it was a tremendous psychological advantage for you guys when you came out? I don't think anybody expected that kind of snowfall for this early in the season. But when the Titans came out.
Were the Oilers
they,
yesterday?
No, the Oilers. They're the Oilers. But, I mean, when they came out, they had to be like, oh, God, you know.
I
mean, knowing
I
that,
said the same
knowing
thing.
That they're 11-0 in snow games, the Patriots are, it's going to be a tremendous psychological advantage for your team.
Well, I think we're confident in the conditions because we go out and practice in them. And whether it rains, snows, or we have winds, or whether it be crosswinds or downfield winds or whatever it is, we go out and we practice in it, and we get used to it. And you kind of learn what you can do, what you can't do, what works better, what plays, you know, you have to be concerned about, and which ones you don't. And so I think our team has some confidence in that. We'll continue to do that. You know, unless it's to the point where the weather's so bad that you just can't get anything done. You know, you're just out there trying to survive. But if you can practice in it and learn from it and gain the experience, then and certainly haven't played in that in the past, whether it be the snow last year in Arizona or the wind in Buffalo or the rain in Oakland or the rain in Seattle. It probably doesn't hurt that you've done that and you've had some success in it. So
as a coordinator for, what, 40 years now?
Yeah.
If you ever...
That's not right.
That really isn't right.
No, I'm not as old as I look either. But did you ever hold a team to minus yardage passing?
I don't think so.
Has anyone ever held a team in the NFL?
Had to.
I looked at my stats. To you.
Your stats?
No, I don't.
I've never.
Can't imagine.
Minus 7 yards. This team is a team that moved the ball last year. They moved it. They ran the ball well. And Kerry Collins, I don't know. You know, they dropped a bunch of balls, but. Minus 7 yards, that's a pretty good accomplishment. How much was it them dropping balls? How much was it you guys whacking them when they caught the balls?
Well, you know, I mean, they dropped a couple. But, you know, I think overall our coverage was pretty competitive. Like the middle read they threw there with Jonathan, it just barely missed his fingers by a couple inches. And then Brandon Merriweather came in from behind and knocked the ball out. So, you know, we're kind of right there. A couple of the one pass to Scaife. Down the seam, you know, Mayo Gerard was right there. It would have been a real good catch if he'd held on. It wasn't like it, you know, hit him right in the gut. And Gerard was there and kind of punched that one out. So, you know, some of those throws and catches, again, in those conditions, you know, would have been real good catches. And, you know, we were close enough there to make them contested. And they didn't hit them. So some of it was good coverage. There were a couple balls they dropped.
Let's take a quick 90-second break. When we come back, we'll talk about the road trip across the pond coming up next as we talk to the coach, Bill Belichick. It's Patriots Monday. We're live down here at Gillette. All right, back here on the Big Show. It is Patriots Monday. We're down here at Gillette Stadium having our weekly chat with the coach who.
And about fish and chips.
About to depart later on this week.
Fish and chips.
And head
London
overseas. Before we break down the opponent, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, is this different than, let's say, going west for 5 or 6 hours on a West Coast trip? Is this just going into a different direction as far as scheduling and the way you work things out?
You know, I think it's a little bit different from the standpoint of, you know, the amount of travel, but just the unfamiliarity with it. And I think you have to add, in our case, we're probably adding about 3 to 4 hours on the trip in terms of, you know, customs and that on both ends of it, you know, the international travel part of it.
Which, so that'll add some of the extra.
Yeah, so that makes it a pretty long trip. It really, it's really pushing that to about, 11 hours by the time you leave the stadium, get to the airport, go through everything, get there, you know, do the security and all that at the other end, bus to the hotel. You know, it's a long haul versus, you know, you fly to L.A.,
right.
You know, you're in, you know, it's as quick as it can be. This is going to add a lot of time just to the whole process.
I was looking at the schedule today. It doesn't look like there's a lot of stuff out of the ordinary. I know it's a big NFL international game, but like a Super Bowl or even an AFC championship, do you have extra things to do? I noticed you had like a 10-minute press conference coming up on Friday.
It's long for you, Coach.
like a 1:20 or something like that on Friday. Are they forcing you to do additional stuff here?
No. It's just the time of, you know, I think we're about an hour away. The hotel's about an hour away from the state, from Wembley. So on Saturday for the walkthrough, that's, you know, an hour down, the walkthrough, an hour back, things like that. You know, we're practicing at the cricket club or something. And that's, you've got a little bit of the traveling and some of the logistics and all. Just add some time to it. But, no, it's not. It's once we get out there, we're kind of on a normal Friday, Saturday, Sunday schedule other than a little extra traveling.
How much does this piss you off that you have to do it? I mean, think about it. It disrupts the flow. Everyone likes to get in the rhythm, you know, not have.
Yeah, I mean, I think once, you know, once we get out there, we're fine. You know, it's a little bit of a travel logistic, but, you know, once we're there, we're prepared for the game. We'll, you know, we'll get ready to go. We'll have our normal preparations for it. And, you know, whatever team plays well, that's the team that'll do well. You know, it's football.
So. Is it more palatable in that they give you the bye on the other side? Because if you had to come back, and you're not going to get back here until you're coming back on Monday, your schedule wouldn't even start until Tuesday. If you were playing that next Sunday, it might be challenged if you're playing a good opponent.
That would stretch it out a little bit. But, you know, again, that's not a whole lot different than if we played a Saturday game or, you know, we've had those in the past, you know, Sunday to Saturday or Monday to Sunday. Those are six-day weeks. So, you know, for every long week's a short week. For every short week's a long week. And that's, you know, over the course of the 16-game season, it all evens out for every team. Basically, you start on the same day, you all end on the same day. In between, if you play on Thanksgiving, then you have extra days after that. Play on Monday night, you had a long week. Short week follows it. So we don't worry too much about that. We just try to make the best we can of the time that we have available.
You've been out there before and played?
I've been to London before. I've never played overseas.
You played once, do you?
Oh, back in '85, just an exhibition game with the Cowboys. But I went 2 years ago.
You went 2 years ago with the Giants, and it was bad weather conditions.
It was just drizzly. Rain. It wasn't bad. It was just drizzly.
But the field you said was. I remember.
Field was mushy.
Big stadium, right?
Yeah, very big stadium. Very nice stadium, but the field got for the amount of rain that came. You wouldn't expect the field to be that mushy. So. And you can see it slowed both teams down. But
they're used to those little soccer players, too. They don't sink in the mud.
Do you have any workouts at Wembley or just at the cricket club? Do you have any workouts at
Wembley? The cricket club is Friday and Wembley Saturday. So it'll be kind of a walkthrough there at Wembley.
So you should get some kind of a feel of how the turf is.
Right, at least get familiar with the surroundings and the locker room and the field and, the scoreboard and, you know, all that. It's not a big thing. But, you know, anytime you play on the road, the players, you know, you always want to go to the stadium early, get out there on the field, see the 40-second clock, see the, you know, look at the wind conditions, the sun, you know, all those things. Just get familiar so you don't get in the game and all of a sudden be surprised of, you know, where's the score, where's the time, or where's the 40-second clock, or, you know.
Well, the crowd, I think the crowd reaction will be interesting, too.
They're very polite out there.
Yeah, but you know when you're on the road. And you're on offense, they're going to be really loud. And you know when you're home, it's going to be different. And you wonder what it's going to be like over there.
It's a Brady crowd. You kidding me?
Right.
Two years ago, it was loud all the time.
Yeah. Was it?
They were even singing soccer songs.
That's what it sounds like. It's more like a soccer game where they just
hooligans.
Go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Coach, speaking of hooligans,
well, soccer meters, so, like, right. When they got the ball, we got the ball kind
so
of
So they're,
thing.
Like, chanting when the ball's in midfield.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Just,
right. They enjoy it. They sold out quick. They enjoy it. They have fun over there. And it actually draws from all over Europe.
Right.
Yeah, especially Germany.
Germany, I heard there are a lot of trips coming in from Germany. So,
Steve's going out, you know, before, if you need anyone to scout or anything or –
I'm going to soccer matches to start some fights.
Fred, he doesn't need anybody that's scouting the cigar bars.
Scouting cigar bars.
All right, let's talk about Tampa Bay, and we'll start with Josh Johnson, the quarterback. Tell us a little bit about
very athletic, very good arm, can really move around in the pocket, very athletic, hard guy to sack. They run bootlegs and rollouts with him, and he can scramble, he can run. So he's got a nice touch, got some – you know, good group of receivers, and he can make plays on his own. You think you got him, and he's out of there, so you got to be careful.
How much has his system changed with the new guy?
Well, you know, we're not really that familiar with him. Just looking at him, I'd say a lot of what they do is it's not the same, but there's some similarities to what Tennessee ran. A lot of two tight ends and one back, a lot of three receivers and one back. They have a very good group of backs, kind of like Tennessee. You know, different, but they're all pretty good. So, you know, a good offensive line. They've only given up 4 or 5 sacks. A lot of it's the offensive line. Some of it's the quarterback. And, of course, Winslow, tight end, is a, you know, he's a force there. They, you know, he catches a lot of short passes, catches a lot of third down red area passes, and, of course, he can get down the field on third down. So, you know, they're well-balanced. They have well-balanced attack.
How about defense? Because this guy was a disciple of Monty Kiffin, right? He worked with
Monty. Jim Bates. Well, Jim Bates is a coordinator, and he, you know, I worked
the
with
head
him
coach
at Cleveland.
Was. Didn't we
yeah, right, money? Raheem. But yeah, but Jim Bates is the coordinator, and you know, Jim's playing a lot of, you know, things similar to what he played at Miami when he was there with Wanstead. A lot of, you know, two deep things, quarters and cover two and that type of deal. They're fast. They're athletic. You know, good corners. The Tlaib's very good, very athletic guy, big guy, you know, over 6 feet and long arms. And he usually matches the other team's best receiver, like Roy Williams and Lee Evans and Steve Smith, guys like that. So, you know, that'll be a challenge for us. And they're an active athletic group.
Chris Hovind's on that team, correct?
Yes.
Still wear that paint, the kiss makeup.
Has he reached 6 feet yet?
I don't know if they let him do that anymore.
Why do you think it's a team that is struggling so badly? We asked you the same question last week about Tennessee because it was hard to believe with them, a team that was 13 wins. Probably a little bit more believable when you're looking at this team. But what do you look at when you see them and try to figure out why?
You know, yesterday against Carolina, that was a real competitive game. Yeah. They can run the ball. They've got good receivers. They've got a good tight end. The quarterback's athletic. The offensive line's done a good job. They really have. They've given up some yards on the defense, but you know, they're very good return game. Excellent returners. So you know, we have a lot of respect for them, and they played well. And you know, sometimes they maybe not for 60 minutes. You know, they have a little lapse here or there, and then that ends up hurting them. But you know, over the bulk of the game, they do a pretty good job, and I thought they played very well against Carolina last night.
What is the strong point on defense? Unfortunately, Tampa Bay's not on a lot up here.
Right. I think their fronts, they have a very athletic front. Those guys can run, and they're quick, and they've got some power up there. So you got to do a good job blocking them. They're not a huge blitzing team. Rude, the middle linebacker, makes, he's already got, I think, over 100 tackles, something like that. It's only been 6 games, so he's in a lot of plays. You got to block him.
Not that the trading deadline is as big a thing in football, but with the trading deadline coming up tomorrow, is anything on the horizon for the Patriots?
You know, I'd be surprised, Steve. Nothing at this point. Mm-hmm. You never know what calls might come in, but normally this isn't a real heavy time for trades, just because nobody has a lot of extra depth and by the time you get somebody in, if they don't really know your system, trying to get them started at this point is, you're not sure how much more you get out of them, during the year. I think, for example, the Braylon Edwards trade last week to the Jets, those two systems were very similar, mm-hmm. the Cleveland system and the Jets system. So terminology and all that. I think you have a lot quicker, a lot better chance to get to speak quickly if you make a trade systematically. There's similarities.
Besides quarterback, what would be the hardest transition for a player to make on this team? Receiver, running back, lineman? Seems like receiver is a difficult one, DB.
Well, I'd say offensively, pretty much anything would be, you know, challenging just because, you know, we have a number of different protections and a lot of different formations. So the tight ends and the receivers that are involved in formations, you know, there's some learning there. And then in the running game, you know, that's not too bad. But the passing game, the different protections for alignment, for backs, for tight ends that are involved in those protections, and they're fairly involved.
There was a rumor that you were looking to trade for Chris Long. I spread the rumor.
No, but there is a
Fred made this one on.
As I'm sure you've already heard, but NFL Network did report today that the Baltimore Ravens might be interested in trading with you for Joey Galloway.
Mike Lombardi.
They contacted Mike Lombardi from NFL Network. Is anybody any truth to that at all?
Yeah, well, Steve's question about is there anything going on, I'd say as of right now, I'm sitting here, no. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Could that change? I guess it could, but right now, no.
It is amazing.
Bring him in. How useful is a receiver coming in here going to be by when? By the last game of the year? I mean, virtually impossible to get the system.
Right. Well, that's, you know, I like the Gaines-Adams trade last week from Tampa to Chicago, you know, with 3 years left on his contract, a younger player. So, you know, I'm sure that trade was made with more than just this year in mind. Not that this year isn't important, but, you know, he's got 3 years to go on his contract. He's a young guy. You know, I'm sure that's somebody that, you know, Chicago wanted to work with, and yeah. He gave up a second-round pick to do it or whatever it was, but it sounded like it was a fairly high pick. So, you know, I think there needs each trade like that is kind of unique. There's some special circumstances that makes it a good situation for both sides, whatever those circumstances are. But the number of those that are really out there, I think, are pretty limited.
So for the most part, you would trade at this point, unless it's a guy that's young, that has years in his contract that can help you in the next couple
years. I think it would have to be a very unique situation, something that you really, you know, hey, I'm willing to make this trade. There's 10 games left to go in the season. You might be able to get the guy at that point without having a trade for him. But, no, I'm willing to do it now for some specific reason. He's got years left on his contract. He knows your system. You really need them, you know, whatever it is.
A snapper from New York, let's say.
There you go.
Now, I remember this last year, and maybe it's the advent of NFL Network and maybe the competition with ESPN or whatever, mm-hmm. but very few trades come down in the NFL. And everybody looks at the trading deadline like it's a big deal.
Right.
It's a big deal in some of the other sports. Certainly in baseball, it happens. And it's
very
easy
to pick the system
on right,
baseball.
Exactly. And yet, there are rumors flying all over the place in the last 24 hours. I mean,
right.
Half of the Oakland Raiders have been traded away, according to somebody on one of the two networks.
That's right.
And yet usually nothing happens. Is there much conversation or talk that goes amongst the teams, or is this kind
no.
of more rumors and the media, you know, throws them around?
Yeah, I'd say there's overall very little, Glenn. The time there's player movement is at the 53 cut. That's where all the movement is you come down to that final cut and you know, one team's releasing 20 players, another team's releasing 20 players, and, you know, which guys are going to get claimed, which guys, you know, you want a guy, but you know somebody ahead of you is going to claim them. You know, you trade for them, and you know, you have roster spots. You can create them a lot more easily than you can in the middle of the season. And, you know, you don't – every team's got some injuries then, but you don't have as many in August generally as what you have in the middle of October. So – that's when the player movement is, and everybody's roster is at the lowest point. You know, now teams have guys on injured reserve, and they have practice squad players and all that. So there's a few less players available than there were back in August. So if you're looking for players, August at the 53 cut, that's the time to get them.
And
there's never more players on the market than there are at the 53 cut. There's no practice squad. The injured reserve is minimal, so you keep the 53 you want, and everybody else out there is available. And that's the best it'll ever be in the National Football League, final cut-down day.
And the main reason is what Fred just said, in that teams don't want to pick up players because they can't learn the system quickly enough?
Well, you're further along. Right. You know, you've already been, you know, you're 6 weeks into the season, so.
What benefit do you get out of the player?
Yeah, how long does it take you to get them up to speed? And you're not necessarily thinking that when you get them. You know, prior to the first week, you're saying, well, maybe I can get him ready for the opener, maybe I can get him ready for the second game. But, you know, you feel like you can probably, you know, over a 16-game schedule, get him ready to do, you know, some or most of it, depending on the circumstances. But that's when the player movement occurs in a National Football League. And Not that there isn't a little bit here or there at other times, but that's when the bulk of it is.
And now with the salary cap restraints, you get guys cut that still have a lot of productivity left because they have a cap number that the teams can't absorb in August.
Yeah, most of the cap stuff is out of the way at this point. I mean, because everybody's obviously under the cap. And so, you know, unless you're going to add a player that has a very large cap number, which probably doesn't happen too much at this time of year, for the most part, those players aren't. That's not too big of an issue. Most players are really at this time, they're probably pretty close to the minimum if you were to sign them.
All right, one final thing, because Fred was too shy to ask you the question. Did you ever think about throwing the red flag out there to challenge the safety yesterday?
No,
60 would have been sweet.
Fred wanted to ask that question.
61.
Honestly, 61. Looking at the play on the coach's tape, I think they made the right call. I think we hit him on about the half yard line. He was on our side of the goal line. The referee, you know, made the call, or he was going to make the call as a safety, but he was behind the play, and the line judge came in from the side and he marked it right away at the half yard line. Yeah. There was no hesitation on his part, and the referee saw him mark it, and then he kind of, you know, waved off even thinking about the safety because, you know, he knew that the referee on the side, you know, had a good look at it, and I really think that was a good call. And they were very definitive on it. There wasn't a lot of, you know, we're not sure. It was like this is where he got hit. And I think that's about right.
Now, after the game, were the guys a little stunned? They were able to put up 59 points and hold them minus. I mean, just go in the locker room and say.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you never have a game that you win 59 to nothing. I mean.
You ever won 59 to nothing before?
I've been on the other side of that.
Yeah, I think we all have. You know,
that was just a temple.
But you're mad at yourself. 59 to nothing is.
And you ever heard people complain about
45 nothing? What was the score at halftime?
45.
Yeah, 45. Yeah. You know, walking halftime at 45 points. It just doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. So it was nice to have that happen once. But again, as a football player and as a football team, you prepare all week to play 60 minutes. You go through everything to play 60 minutes. And, you know, you don't consciously play one way or another when you're up by 7, you're down by 7, you're up by 14. You know, you keep playing for 60 minutes. And, you know, I go back and look at that Arizona Jet game last year. What was it, 31-0 at the half or something? And, you know, and now we're onside kicking in the fourth quarter with, you know, a one-score game. So, you just don't forget those games. You don't forget the Tennessee-Buffalo game. You just don't forget them.
The Miami game, remember when they took Brady out, Castle came in, threw an interception, they scored again, and the Miami's back in it. We played
Brady back in the game.
Yeah. Well, we get down there in 04 and got a, 11-point lead with 4 minutes ago in the game and get beat. So, you know.
When's enough when the whistle blows?
Until the gun sounds.
Mm-hmm. Nice win, nice step forward, and enjoy jolly.
Need some
old,
help in England with England. The boys?
Yeah, we'll okay. We'll bring you back some tea bags. And
nice.
Fred loves those. We'll do tea next week.
Fred
we got some cigars.
More caffeine for Fred. Just
tea and strumpets. I mean crumpets.
You'll be traveling on Monday, so we'll see you here on Tuesday next week.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks. Have a great week, Bill.
Okay, thanks.